Good evening, Waukesha.
A man born and raised in Waukesha. He did his first hunting and fishing right here. Now he hunts the world and cooks it up deliciously, featured as the Midwestern host of The Fowl Life on the Outdoor Channel. Joel Clayfish was raised in the Shaw.
A couple extra pounds never really hurt, 'cause a country boy is all I'll ever be.
And you're listening to Raised in the Shaw with me, Joel Clayfish, on 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM, the Shaw. Like I said, this is Raised in the Shaw with Joel Clayfish. If you'd like to participate in tonight's show, please feel free to call in 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. We'd love to hear what you have to say, no matter what that is. But I tell you what, I am hot off of the airplane. Just flew back from Florida, where I was down there gator hunting. Got three gators for some folks who were there on spring break. And man, it is awesome to just be able to head down, meet some folks from Wisconsin, have never seen a gator in life, in person, in their life, take them out and put 3 8-footers in the back of the truck. It was so fantastic. And then I found myself with a little extra time, and I did something that is really exciting if you're a hunter, and that is exploring new territory. Just so happens it's turkey season down in Florida right now, and the toms are real early down there. They're chasing the hens around. So we've got Triple J Outfitters, which I own, which takes folks hunting down in Florida. We've got 40 acres near Lake Wales, Florida. So I woke up in the middle of the night, 4:30 a.m., went out, set a spread out. I was using Jargon's new turkey calls, the Snooty. And I sat there and just listened to the sunrise. You want to talk about something crazy? Being a kid from Waukesha, growing up in Wisconsin, and sitting there and watching the sunrise and hear turkeys gobbling with palm trees in the background. I mean, that is absolutely crazy. I mean, you're looking at palm trees, palmettos, cactuses, and hearing turkeys gobble. Well, it just so turned out that I was fortunate enough to have set up about 200 yards from the roost and had a big tom gobbling right near me. You know, if your hair's got to stand up on your arms when you hear that in the morning. There's few things more exciting than that. And these are those beautiful coveted Osceola turkeys. People who are going for the slam, the Osceola is always the toughest one to get because it only exists in one place in the world, and that's Central Florida. But sure as heck, this tom landed and he stared back at the trees. He was waiting for those hens to come out. And eventually they came out, but he wanted nothing to do with my decoys or calling at first. He chased that hen around the field for two and a half, 3 hours. And I think, it's my opinion, the vast majority of people who are unsuccessful turkey hunting is because they run out of patience. Those toms will get out of the trees and they will follow their intended, who they're attempting to suit, and they will follow that hen around. But everybody, a lot of people give up after a while. They say, oh, he's not interested, or he's hung up, that tom's hung up. I'm going to tell you the most effective thing I do in hunting turkeys, and that is just wait. Take a snooze, take a nap. When they disappear, when that hen goes in the woods and that tom follows her, eventually he's going to come back out, and that's exactly what happened. And I was not having luck calling the tom. So I started giving some yelps from the hen, and eventually the hen got mad at the boss hen I had set up, and she came in, and that tom was in tow, and she brought him right to the decoys, and I bagged my first turkey. If we're not friends on Facebook, check me out. Let's become friends on Facebook. You can check out my hunting adventures on there. I usually post a lot of things. And I have to admit, a lot of what I do ends up on the wall. And that is in large thanks to Kyle Schmidt and Dan Trawicki over at Northwoods Taxidermy. Kyle Schmidt, who is not only a taxidermist, but has grown up hunting and fishing, and I have a lot to learn from him. He's hunted the world as well, and I know he's had some of those struggles with turkeys. Kyle Schmidt joins us in the WAUK studios. Kyle, welcome. Great to have you here. Are you a patient turkey hunter, or do you get out and chase them?
Yeah, thanks for having me, Joel. It'll be fun. I'm fairly patient. I agree. You know, those times, they'll get on ahead, and they'll follow her a while, but they tend to get bored of it. If they're not getting what they want, they get bored and they move on. So I've had luck being patient. I'm a patient turkey hunter, also successful. So,
yes. Yeah.
For sure.
I think a lot of people just give up way too early, and you know, they, because it gets tough when you're awfully bored and you're staring at nothing for a while and it's getting hot or cold in the blind.
Yep.
You think, boy, my couch with the TV and a nap sounds pretty good.
Breakfast, yeah. Absolutely.
So, you are an award-winning taxidermist. The stuff you guys do is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of it on the walls of my house. I'd like to say throughout the house, but my wife, as you know, allows one mount in my greater house, and then the rest has to be tucked in what she calls my man room, which is running out of space because of you. But I want you to tell me, what came first for you, hunting or taxidermy?
Oh, for sure hunting. Yeah, for sure hunting, the outdoors, conservation. Taxidermy kind of came into play about 13 years ago in Alaska. So I got family up there, and taxidermy's in the blood. So
rewind, Alaska.
Yep.
How do you have a connection to Alaska? How did you end up in Alaska?
So I got a great uncle, nonetheless. So he lives in Fairbanks, Alaska. And we took a trip up there at 18 years old and drove up and spent about 6 months up there and studied some taxidermy and was able to follow through with it. So, yeah, he's retired. He's been retired for quite a while now, but still knew the trade. Knew what needed to be done, so.
How old were you when you started fiddling with animal hides?
18 years old, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you've been doing it a while now.
Sure.
I don't think people realize that, you know, they say, to the perhaps less informed person, they say, oh, are you going to have that stuffed?
Right, yeah. Yeah, you hear that all the time.
And I think sometimes they don't realize that taxidermy is an incredibly high art form, isn't it?
I mean, yeah, absolutely.
Is it fair to say it's as much art as it is preservation?
Yeah, I would say for sure. There's good taxidermists, there's great taxidermists, there's good businessmen, bad businessmen, good, you know, great businessmen. So you put all that together in a taxidermy business, and there's no doubt there's art involved big time. I would say 100%. It's an artistic ability for sure.
And I don't want to blow the illusion for those folks out there who see something on a wall and think that's a neat preservation of an animal.
Sure.
But let's get into some of the detailing of it. There's a lot of painting involved.
Sure.
Take me through some of the toughest things about taking an animal from the field and making it look real on the wall.
Sure. Yeah. So I mean, it starts with, you know, you got your skin, you know, your tanned skin. You get a customer who wants, you know, he wants what he wants, right? So he wants a certain turn, he wants a certain pose. So, you know, that's where some difficulties start right off the bat. You got to usually alter a form, and the form has to fit your
What's
skin.
What's a form? For those of us who don't know what a form is,
so it's a foam, you know, mold of actual animal, you know, that you're looking to mount. Whitetail, hippo, you name it. They got forms for every animal out there possible, nearly every animal in the world. So we have suppliers that will supply the form, and it's just strictly foam with a plywood back, you know, and that foam shows up, and it's anatomically correct for the most part, but every skin is its own individual skin. Your black buck you shot is different than the black buck, you know, the next guy shot. So everything needs to be fit to the skin, I guess, to begin with, and that's where the difficulties start, is to really fit the form to the skin and give the customer what he wants, and then to follow that, you know, you actually go through the tanning, or the prepping process after tanning, and then it gets mounted. So Then after mounting, it dries usually 2 weeks to a month, depending on the animal. And then epoxy work gets done, so that's actually around the eyes, the mouth, any of the final touches before paint. And then another day of dry time, and then paint. So, and yeah. It's just a lot of steps. You know, it takes time. There's dry time, obviously, for every step. It's just a lot of steps.
I don't think the average person actually has the slightest clue what goes into taking an animal from the field.
Right.
You know, one of the things we talk about on the show, and one of the things very important to conservationists who mm-hmm. are hunters, mm-hmm. and kind of a misconception very often, is that we're out there to kill things.
Right, no.
Now, yeah. That's a very small part of the process. Number one, we care about proliferation of the species. Mm-hmm. Number two, utilization of the meat. Mm-hmm. I cannot tell you, you know, my family eats only wild game. That's all we eat. We don't buy store purchased meat.
Sure.
My wife had cancer at age 35. She wants an organic product. Mm-hmm. You can't get more organic than taking it from the field to the table. But also, as part of the preservation of the animal and in honor of that animal, a hide that can be used for clothing mm-hmm. or put on the wall as an art piece. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a piece of art. You're mm-hmm. actually painting on these pieces as well, aren't you?
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of paint goes into some of them. Africa game especially. Yeah, lots of paint.
Why do you say Africa game especially?
They get epidural slip more common epidural slip, and which is just the outer coloration of the skin will actually flake away as it dries. And then you have that dead skin look, and we're not going to give you a product that has dead skin, for example. I mean, you don't want to look at your animal and think, God, that looks dead. Our goal is to bring it back to life. So a lot of paint goes into that as far as bringing the animal back to life.
I think a lot of it is actually in the the devil's in the details, mm-hmm. I think is what they say.
The funny thing is 99% of the time the customer doesn't even know the amount of details that we are putting into it, but we know. And that's, I think, at the end of the day, that's all that matters, is you find a taxidermist that believes in what he's doing and is putting the time and detail into it, whether you even know what that is or not. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of times people don't, they want the product to look as natural as it was in the field.
Sure.
And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about the difference in pricing, because pricing is all over the board when it comes to taxidermy.
Sure.
But you're talking about a product that's going to be potentially a family heirloom piece, mm-hmm. something you're going to put on the wall that you can pass down to your kids. And everything has a story, and I always say that life's about experiences, not things. Mm-hmm. And then secondarily to that, if you're going to have things in your life, make them things that are about experiences.
Yeah. Amen.
We've got Kyle Schmidt here, and stick around, because Brian Johnson from Brian's on the Round, who's also a hunting buddy of mine and a cook with his brand new restaurants, coming up in the second half hour. You're listening to Raised in the Shaw on 101 FM WAUK 540 AM, The Shaw.